Welcome back to Compliments to the Chef. I'm your host, Nancy.
And I'm your host, Bits.
And we have yet another, I mean, the bangers just keep on coming this season, but we are so lucky to have an incredible guest on the pod today. Before I tell you who it is, I'm going to tell you a little bit about them. So we have Chennai-born, Chicago-raised with a stacked resume, has cooked in the kitchens of Jean-Georges, ever heard of him, Thomas Keller, Gagan Anand, Hello World All-Stars. He has a famed Chicago pop-up supper club, Wazwan, and he is now the executive chef of Lilac Tiger, Coach House, and the new Mira in Chicago. This is the two-time James Beard Award semifinalist, Zubair Mohajer. Welcome to the pod.
Woo! All right, thank you so much. I appreciate it. This is really, really exciting.
Love that. Well, we really want to start by asking you a question that was super top of mind when we were watching the show. Everyone was going gaga for your fried chicken sandwich. We had Cesar saying, like, I have been seeing him do this for years. Yep. We had the judges just salivating over it. Talk to us about this chicken sandwich.
Oh, man. It's only 20 minutes, right? So I'm going to give you the fast version of it. When I started about in 2017, because of this human running around right now interrupting this thing, I started something called Wazwan, which was in, you know, I was like, hey, I don't want to be a chef that's working 100 hours a week. I'm going to be really naive and start a supper club. Because in 2017, nobody was doing pop-ups or supper clubs or anything like that. So I can be more home. I can be a present father. My wife cannot hate me for being away for so long and all those things, you know. So Wazwan basically was a tasting menu, and it's a Kashmiri tradition, which Kashmir is a northern, you know, part of north of India, west of Pakistan. I always joke, you know, when the British leave, they always leave something for us to fight over. So Kashmir is that for Pakistan and India, right? So, and as most places in the world that is in conflict zones, it's beautiful people, beautiful food, beautiful traditions all being intertwined in one area because of the spice road and all of the beautiful history that's there. So we used to start out doing these, like, you know, 22 course in-house or in a warehouse or wherever the hell we could set up a fire or set up electricity to do these dinners. And that's how we started. And so one of those first dinners, it was family meal time, right? And you always have to feed your cooks at family meal. And, like, we just had a bunch of ingredients and, like, I whipped up exactly, I'm not even joking, I could not make it up. What I made for that challenge was what I whipped up. It was basically a scallion corn cake with, like, we had a bunch of carrots and onions. So I just made a quick pickle with that. One of my sous chefs, he was Filipino. He's like, this is called a jara. It's like something that is very kind of like B&B pickle, but, like, with some spices, it's sweeter. It's really dope. I'm like, yeah, sure, we'll do that. And then I just had a bunch of chicken. So I was like, hey, I know I'm Indian. I love, like, spicy fried chicken. So I just made this chicken, made this thing. And I posted a picture of that original plate up that I did as a joke, like, 8 years ago. And my cooks just kind of looked at me, my boys, really. And they're just like, yo, this is really fucking good, you know? And we're just like, I guess, yeah, sure. And then so that dish went on as for almost 6 months as, like, a – as really like an anchor to our tasting menu. And then, well, okay, I know I said long story short, but you guys met somebody who talks more than you. But basically, you know, I Heart Halal Festival comes to me and they're like, hey, you're one of the only Muslim newer representations of, you know, the industry and culinary background. You know, nobody in our community is going after cooking and things like that. So it's like, why don't you guys do this street food festival? And I was like, I don't really do street food, but I have this chicken, right? And so I was like, let's just fucking put this thing in between a bun and, like, take it to this, you know, I'm Indian. I'm trying to make some money too selling food. So it's like 30,000 people. I'm like, yeah, let's do, went to FedEx that morning, printed a sign for like $12. It just said tandoori fried chicken and fries put this thing in between a bun. I convinced Toronto Baking to give me 2,000 buns. Begged them basically because you need a resale license. So I was figuring out a lot of things about being a business owner at this time because I was an illegal supper club dude. You know what I mean? So the guy from Toronto was like, what do you want? And I'm like, dude, I just want 22,000 buns, man. I need buns for this event. I don't really know what a resale license is. And so it was just such a Chicago moment where the guy was like, all right, Show up to dock number 5, bring an empty car and $492 cash. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, all right, done.
Done.
Bet. And so I send my boy in like a Jetta, and like he shows up to Navy Pier, and all you could see was his hands and his face, and the rest of it was just brioche buns in his car, you know? So that was the day that tandoori fried chicken, or the way we love to call it, THC, because it's tandoori honey chicken, just to kind of poke fun at it.
Hey. I love
that. Back in Chicago, it's the THC Sando that was born that day, and it was like 500 pounds of chicken. We sold out everything. And I knew that day, and I was like realizing, I'm like, shit, man, I'm like, I'm going to be the fried chicken guy. You know what I mean? And it's mm-hmm. like, you start out on these really like, and it's so wild, right? Because without that day, without this fucking piece of chicken, this sandwich that we will never not be able to make, like, we are not here. Yeah. Lilac Tiger doesn't exist. Coach House doesn't exist. Mira doesn't exist. I don't exist. Like, you know, nothing that I do is relevant if I don't just take this leap of faith of, hey, this tastes really good, but get out of my ego and get out of my mind about what the, oh, I want to tell this story of this, that, and like, you know, get into this pretentious zone of like only doing tasting menus or only fine dining, as we like to say it. Mm-hmm. It's the simple food, of course, that always takes us forward and gives us this like, you know, platform and notoriety that I'm like, I would have never imagined being in a room, let alone being on Top Chef, but being in a room watching my man freaking Balud, you know, enjoying the crap out of this thing.
Oh my God.
And me and Cesar like know each other, and Cesar was like, yo, he really, and we were whispering to each other about this thing that he's like, yo, he's really like liking this. I'm like, bro, if I do this dish, and I was so mad that it was so early on Top Chef too, because I was like, I'll pull it out when I need to, but I'm like, yep, brunch, of course, got to do it. But I was like, if you pull it out and you don't win, this is going to be wild, because like it destroys your whole legacy, right? It's like you have to do it. Man, so I mean, I'm super grateful. My man Balud was all like, this is exquisite. And I'm like, bro, just that you even like this is pretty awesome, that I'm watching you eat it. And one of the founding fathers of like the way we eat in America, man. So it's just like, it was, I could not have imagined it to be a better moment. It was really cool.
Well, what a beautiful end to the story of the chicken sandwich. Maybe not an end.
It's not an end at all.
To that chapter. Oh my God.
It's just a phase of it. You know, like every day. And I don't know if you guys have been to Chicago, you know, but we're in Wicker Park, great neighborhood.
Love.
We've got people from like Winnetka coming down to eat this thing now, you know, with like their families, you know. So I'm just like, hey, welcome to the neighborhood, you know. So it's just like it's really cool what the reach does, of course, but that's why you do things like this. It's like we all get to get introduced, even in a big city like Chicago or a connected city like Chicago. Like you get to really like, you know, you're getting in front of people that would have never imagined to leave northern part of Chicago or like Evanston or something. If this family comes all the way down from Winnetka to come eat your sandwich, that's so cool. Like that's pretty awesome, you know.
It's unbelievable. That's like the power of food. I mean,
100%.
I don't know. That chicken sandwich is manifestation in a sandwich. That's so, what an incredible through line to just like trace through your career. I mean, obviously you're much more than the chicken sandwich. And we saw that on Top Chef. Was there something else in your mind, like to your point, like, okay, I was going to keep that chicken sandwich in my back pocket. Was there something that you were hoping to showcase that you didn't have the time to showcase?
The freaking episode after I was gone was like the global flavors episode. I was like, come on, bro.
Yo, what were your thoughts on what was your thoughts on the Hollandaise?
Hey, I have been talking to Vinny since I was watching. I was who the hell told you Kama Sutra is a freaking dish? You know, like,
it's I'm not. Like, I know it's not. Was like, I've never heard of this.
But that's the beauty of it. That's why I love Vinny, man. Vinny finds us, like, you know, if you tell Vinny a story, that man is going to deliver on that story. You know, and same with Lana too, right? They're great storytellers and they're really great, you know, presenters of food, cooks, of course. But like, I was laughing so hard with Vinny, and I was like, bro, I don't know who you were hanging out with in that Indian restaurant. That guy took you for a ride, bro. He's like, this is the dish I make for my girlfriend. You know, this is called Kama Sutra. It's like, you know, and Vinny was like, yeah, which region is that from? You know, and he just like went with it. And so it was fun to watch. It was fun to watch.
Oh
for sure,
my God.
You know? It was great. But yeah, I mean, I would say maybe I just wanted to cook more. I was trying to cook as much, You never want to go on and just be like, oh, I just cook Indian food because I cook mm-hmm. Indian food. But that's not my upbringing, right? It's like when you grow up in America, you cook kind of everything. And yeah. I was, my mom's an amazing, I would say chef, yeah, because she never really did it professionally, but she was a huge catering, you know, cook. And what's exciting for her as I was working in restaurants, you know, with like John George's restaurant, Pump Room, and working at, you know, Bouchon, I would bring some of those things back home. Like, hey, man. You guys should eat this. This is pretty cool. This is called, you know, so-and-so. And it's just like, so we started cooking a lot more globally in the house as well. And so you're not just eating Indian food all the time. So, I mean, I think what I wanted to do on the show, and I feel like I could have done it for a little bit longer. It was a pretty shocking elimination for sure. But I think, you know, kind of continuing on that path of like introducing achars and different flavor combos like we do in my restaurants. Like we really just mess around. We really have a lot of fun, you know, giving people something really familiar in the sense of something they can connect to. But then once they put it in their mouth, they're like, holy crap, this is going in. It's a fireworks, you know? So kind of really, you know, capitalizing on spices. And that's what I always hold to is like, man, you could put me next to anybody. When you're Indian, our superpower is spices, and our superpower is how to really hone in on the ratios of spices, which I've seen some, you know, three Michelin, whatever plaques you want to bring to the table, bro. If I put you and the Patel brothers in front of a wall of spices, you ain't gonna know shit what to do. So it's like, I know what my strengths are, you know? I may not be able to make a flower out of an apple, but I can make some shit taste real good. So
do you, I mean, on the spices piece, we were kind of like, what do you call it? Like guessing with next to no reasoning about it. But does that complicate things when you add the like layer of time and the pressure of time to like develop those flavors? Can it be done successfully in that short time?
No, I definitely think it can be done successfully. Yeah. I think a lot of times it's like getting out of your head, you know, of course, I'm sure you guys hear that all the time, right? It's like, that's the whole, the clock just activates that. But I think sometimes having too much time is a problem, you know? So it's like, I felt like that was my downfall too, is that it was, I was thinking too, like I was trying to be too prepared, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like the duck should have gone on last, but I mean, also, granted, we're cooking in a fucking tent and I have induction burners to do this shit, you know? So it's like, it's, you know, all the circumstances matter, you know, the timing of, you just never know, hey, is an area going to be available? And like, that's where the clock doesn't really care. You can't go to the judge's table and be like, you know, somebody was using the stove at that time. I couldn't really like sear my duck right. Like you can't, that can't be an excuse. You kind of just have to figure it out, you know? So sometimes that works in your favor and you make really delicious things, and sometimes you fall short and we're human. So things happen, you know?
Yep. 100%. Okay. So you coming back to the kind of the chicken, this is like a through line through your career.
Yeah.
You know, we're living through yet again one of these like once in a generation moments. You famously did a bit of a career pivot back during the last, you know, 2008 financial crisis.
Yep.
Curious what advice you have for folks looking to pivot their career during this financial crisis.
Is this a financial crisis or this is like an America crisis? You know what I mean?
This is a crisis of morality.
I don't know if you can pinpoint this crisis on one specific thing, but I would say in a calamity crisis or whatever the hell you want to call what is happening right now, you know, people got to eat. People still have to eat. And so one of the things I saw that was really promising, I mean, and trust me, it's like as a restaurant owner and a chef and like, and also, you know, quite frankly, as a Muslim chef that is constantly navigating and, you know, like we were talking about Passover, like, you know, our communities right now are faced with very, very, you know, pressure filled conversations that many people don't want to have. Many people don't have the energy to have, or they're too scared to have, you know? So it's like, for me, I'm never scared of shit or I don't shy away from a conversation. And the coach house culture is a very important thing. We talk about everything that's happening, you know? So it's, I would say for somebody right now, it's like, follow your dreams is never a bad idea, because especially when it comes to, if I'm promoting, hey, go cook. Yeah. Because we still got to eat. So, the restaurants were the number two highest grossing industry. Like, we're still doing okay in the sense of people are going out to eat. Are we gonna feel for sure the hits of prices going up? Yes, everything like that gradually happens. We can already feel it, but people are still gonna eat, and people are still gonna have to have sustenance, and it's up to us to not only feed people, but don't be afraid to have hard conversations, so it's for me right now, it's important about being myself is very important. And so I think for anybody out there that's navigating a career path change, it's like, bro, how many we're not fucking cats, this is one life you got on this earth. Why do you want to get to old age and be like, oh, I could have done that, I could have done this, I wish I'd done that. Mm-hmm. I learned that very, very early on in an Indian household, that the pressure is on. But I don't know, my wife looks at me sometimes, she's like, how do you even navigate your world like this? And I'm like, cuz I've pissed off my mom so many times, it's like now she's immune to that, so it's like I can only navigate like this, right? So it's being yourself and doing it to the max every day is the only way. If you'll fail sometimes, you'll have a lot of wins, and sometimes you'll just, it won't work out. But nobody has control over you. Nobody tells you what to do. Nobody calls me to see where I'm at. You know what I mean? So I get to go do what I love to do every day, and that's the biggest gift for me.
It's so nice. I feel as though these big sort of paradigm shifting moments make people really reflect on what's important to them. Yeah. And it sounds like at each of these critical junctures in your career, you have, dug deep and said, okay, well, what's important to me, and what's going to make me feel as though I really did it to the fullest. And
yeah,
I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how you essentially graduated from the supper club into what you're doing now, into the less give me $492 for 1,200 buns and into a legitimate establishment.
Into 100%. And that's the funny part. It's like we never stopped cooking through the pandemic. So because of this chicken sandwich, we went right through. We were in a food hall. That was our first graduation from a supper club. But then we realized food halls are freaking thieves, So they're trying to take
I hate food halls. Oh, wait, you liked them.
I know you do. Yeah, 100%. Thieves.
Oh, my God.
Freaking
dude,
thieves,
you.
And
I am very team valid.
A certain food hall with a magazine of its own probably won't ask me to do anything ever again. But, all jokes aside, let's open something. No, I'm joking. But it's, taking percentages just doesn't work. It's stupid. But you got to do something to survive, right? So that it did whatever we could to survive. And then, it was boom, March, 20th or whatever it was. We're like, we're not opening tomorrow. There was no support. There was no, hey, we're going to do this, that. And we were in Politan Row, which went under for obvious reasons because they were run very, very poorly. Timeout is probably the only one that does well here and there in the West Loop, so that's great. But they're just not supportive to the restaurant. So it's like during the pandemic, we realized people like DoorDash charging us 35% for food. Like everybody was trying to talk like they wanted to support restaurants, but nobody wanted to support restaurants, including, certain big government agencies that say this, this, and that. It's like that only goes to certain restaurants. They only goes to 900 locations, gets a freaking PPP loan. But we couldn't get a PPP loan. Can you believe that? And we're a small business. So it's like things like that are what you navigate. And I'm sorry, it's not a sexy answer of what translates from supper club to a real business, but this is the everyday shit that happens. Yeah. And so when we were in that mode, we finally found this location. It was supposed to be in West Town, and I was excited about it. We got the architect to, do all the things and map it out. We're showing up the morning of, and this is, beautiful. What is it? It was a beautiful March in Chicago in 2021 when it had snowed 3 feet the day before, and then it was 50 degrees the day after. Amazing, beautiful. Spring is here. And I unlock the door to the space that we were supposed to move into, and there's a river flowing out of my space into the street. Because the snow had melted and caved in the roof and came down our furnace. And I was watching this and I was like, so do I just jump in and electrocute myself and just fuck it, call it, you know what I mean? Or then, you know, the brain is like, nope, you have a wife, you have a child that love you and family that love you. You can't do this. And so, you know, you do what any chef does. You go outside and you smoke like 10 cigarettes to calm yourself down. And you basically retool, you know, and that's the thing that I've always done throughout my career and throughout any calamity. And I feel like people that work with me now look at me like I'm insane, because if anything happens, I'm just like, eh, we'll figure it out. It's cool. You know, it'll, whatever's supposed to happen, it's going to happen. It's like, why aren't you figuring out this is going to happen? Like, nah, take a breath, walk away for a second, come back. There'll be a solution. You know, in that moment, I was like, well, everything's done. What do I do? And a lot of people I know, and I wouldn't blame them for it, would just call it or go home and tuck themselves into bed, cry and do whatever. I definitely probably cried alone in my car that day while smoking 10 cigarettes. But then I was like, hey, I'm going to call my fucking realtor and be like, I need a space to pop up into again, because I got five people that worked with me and I need to make sure they're good. But like, we can't stop. We just got to generate something, because some shit's going down in front of me, which I'm going to figure it out later, because I can't do anything about this flood that's happening. But, you know, and that realtor found me the space that is now Lilac Tiger and Coach House. He walked me into a spot that was small in Wicker Park. It was a Philly cheesesteak joint, which makes no sense in Chicago. But, you know, the person was just not doing well. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take it over as a pop-up. And he walks me through this property and through the courtyard. And I'm like, what's back here? He's like, oh, this is a storage unit that comes with it. I'm like, storage unit? I'm like, this has a dope-ass door. You know what I mean? So, like, he shows me this door, and I'm like, this is not a storage unit, man. Just because of the years of being a supper club, being able to do shit in warehouses and all that. I'm like, yeah, I'll take the storage unit too. Yeah. Like, I have a lot of stuff that I can store in there. But the storage unit is what became the coach house, because it's a 142-year-old coach house that we cleaned up. And as we cleaned up, we uncovered the bar. We uncovered a banquette that was in there. We added 22 seats. And that's where I do this every Thursday, Friday. It's me and my chef, Jacob. We do this, you know, beautiful 8-course menu that it's intimate. We're with you in it. We're doing this exactly what we're doing right now. But, you know, you guys can have drinks and food and shooting the shit. And, like, that's how we captivate people of, like, people that come through there with us now are friends. You know what I mean? So that's how the graduation of, like, something that could have been a disaster that could end you. You turn that into an opportunity that now is two spots that do both do very, very different things. So Lilac Tiger is our fun, you know, bar with street food. And basically, you know, Coach House became our tasting menu restaurant that everybody comes through. And so, and then what happened in Coach House about a year ago is that, you know, my wife loves to watch shows like Love is Blind. And so, like, I can't handle things like that. And so I'm always like, she's a very smart person, by the way, but she needs, like, really dumb TV to put her down to sleep, basically.
Preaching to the choir.
So she loves that shit. So, like, that's how she diffuses her genius, is by watching this shit. And so when she does that, I always go down deep rabbit holes of, like, I'm a food nerd. You know, I love history when it comes to food and just cultural history when it comes to food. And so during one of these nights, I was just like, what? I'm like, so I find this story of this Indian princess that gets kidnapped. Cause that's the shit that happens in the 1600s. But she gets kidnapped from, like, the western coast of India and by Portuguese pirates, and is set up to get married, like Love is Blind, I guess. But, you know, set up to get married to, like, a prominent member of the Catholic Church in, like, Mexico City, which is New Spain at the time. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And so basically it's she is the first woman individual to be stepping into Mexico City, you know, and she brings with her all of her, you know, cultural, you know, clothing and all of these things. And this is where the story of China Poblana and the cultural identity of China Poblana starts in Mexico City, where it's this representation of all these South Asian and Southeast Asian immigrants that come through and start basically cooking and start in, you know, bringing their culture and their, this whole thing is produced by it. And she ends up being a big part of the community, because thankfully for her, the guy she was supposed to marry is dead by the time she gets there. So she just gets to become part of the community and starts cooking for the church and cooking for the people and becomes them. And so, but the funny thing is she's 14 when she arrives, right? So she is now, when she's an older woman, she is as much Mexican as she is South Asian immigrant. Right. And so when she passes, she is sainted, and her you know, Christian name was Catarina de San Juan. And you go to Puebla, And you could see a mural of her with like an Indian skirt, a Spanish blouse, you know, an indigenous, like, you know, in jewelry and things like that. But her Indian born name was Mira. And so that's why we named the third restaurant Mira, because we started doing these dining. We started testing this in the coach house for about a year before we opened that restaurant. And my good friend, Chef Rishi, who's doing an amazing job of just kind of, you know, he's at the helm of that place right now. He was, we knew each other because I slid into his DMs like 6 years ago. Because I was like, who is this other Indian chef in Chicago? Like, there's not a lot of us out here, you know? So he was working with Rick Bayless at the time. And so we make this connection, again, going off of your questions, like off of a random inquiry, you know, just saying hello. And we grab coffee one day and we're like, dude, it doesn't take much for two brown dudes to get along, you know? So we became cousins immediately. And so, like, we just, he was in Miami at the time. We were kind of like, hey, we should probably maybe do something like this. And so after we tested it in the coach house, you know, he came through and we found the space that it is in. And so one day I just, you know, the best phone calls I get to make is the, hey, quit your job phone call, you know, because I remember quitting the industry, or not quitting by choice, but like really being able to leave in my heart. Like, I don't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. For me now, I take so much pleasure in like calling people and be like, hey, quit your fucking job. Let's go start your own thing. This is your name on it. It's going to be hard as hell, but it's yours. You know, and that's the most important part. And that's what Mira is for us. And Rishi's been crushing it. He's doing an amazing job. And like before I even went out to be on Top Chef, it was wild because it was like, we opened right as like the first days started. So it was like all this prep to open. And then couldn't be there for the actual opening night of it, which was wild. So it was just like, I was there. But then 3 months in, we got, you know, voted as one of 14 best new restaurants in the country. So it's just like, you know, all of that from a disaster and a freaking tandoori fried chicken. You know what I mean? So it's like,
incredible.
We're blessed, man. We get to wake up every day and get to do this. And it's like, I don't know. You can't not be grateful. You can't not be thankful, you know, to whatever you believe in up top. So
totally. And something that you touched on that we were actually really curious to hear your perspective on is it feels as though – and we live in New York, so I understand that our purview is a bit biased, but there are these waves of different cuisines being popular. And we just had a big Thai renaissance in New York, and we are starting to have the rumblings of an Indian food renaissance, at least in New York City. You know, we have Sema, which was nominated for, or I think won a Michelin star, which is
got
huge. There are rumors Dishoom might be coming to New York. So I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about how you see your place in the like renaissance and elevation of Indian food in the American zeitgeist.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I think if you asked Indians if we're having a renaissance, it's like we've always been there. Yeah. You know what I mean? it's always been there. I think Sema is – I haven't eaten there, but, you know, being a South Indian as well, I can just tell that chef is full of life and like just smiles and like, you know, his food is great. And even the Dhamaka guys and like the Bungalow guys, they're all doing great. And it's like, they're really representing well. And I think we're in a different sector, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because I think there's a big difference between, what I love about, I mean, obviously New York is New York. So it's like Curry Hill and all those things. Those have been around, right? Mm-hmm. What you're seeing now with Sema is definitely something new because it's South Indian food. I would say with the others, I think it's more of a renaissance of like service and ambiance and like, you know, giving a more welcoming place for more people to come and enjoy the food that's kind of always been there, you know, like, biryani's always been there, you know, like things that they're really, really great at. The really great North Indian food is there. It's always been there. But now, you know, having it in these beautiful places where there's a bar involved and you get more service and you get more, you know, it's more of a night out, right? And I think it's more that, really. And even here, right? Like what we're doing too. It's like I used to go to Dhabas growing up. In college, you didn't care what time of night it was. It was great food. It was delicious food. But the difference is that we're taking the reins from a generation that did it from a necessity to survive. And I think respect needs to be paid to that. You know, we can, I always joke about butter chicken and things like that, but the joke always lands with fuck the British, not our own people, you know? But so basically, but you know, all seriousness though, it's like, you know, all those people that came before us and who we are taking these reins from, they had to do this to survive, and they put their culture on the board and introduced people to something that they had never been, you know, without them, we're not here. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I feel like it's a kind of a renaissance, but I think it's more what I always tell my chefs here, man, trust your guests. I think the American palate has changed. American palate wants more. The American palate doesn't want heavy cream dishes. They don't want the same old shit that they've been eating for 30 years. And mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, India is like going to Wisconsin, and the language changes, and the religion changes, and the food changes, you know? So it's like going to Indiana, and there's a different food there too. That's how diverse it is. So for us to be still stuck in butter chicken world is really an insult to the traditions that are really there. So yes, I think some places, a lot of places are, you know, pushing beyond that. They still probably have butter chicken on the menu for the basics, but you know, I understand it's a big city. You got to do it. But yeah, I think New York's going through a really great moment. I think it's awesome to see them, you know, doing more than the regular food. And I think it's a testament for us taking the reins from the previous generation that really made those sacrifices and didn't get all the glory and were made fun of because I can't walk out of this restaurant without smelling like spices. It's like, motherfucker, you try cooking with spices, you know, you cook with rosemary and thyme your whole fucking life. Like, so it's giving respect on that art form is it's not always fine dining, it's not always finesse as you say it, but our grandmas, I always say in the coach house, is like, oh, they're as crazy, as talented, and as stubborn as any French chef you'll ever work for. You know what I mean? So, and you know, some may say they'll cook them under the table, but yeah, I think it's an awesome thing. I mean, Chicago also is going through it with Indian, with us. We were the Coach Ops was the first tasting menu, Indian tasting menu in Chicago a couple of years ago. Indian came right after, amazing chef Sujan. You know, they have a, they got a Michelin star. We didn't. That's another topic. We don't have white tablecloths. But, you know, but basically, we love that team. I'm sure they watch this thing too. But it's just fun. It's really great to see everybody I think, not to be long-winded, but everyone is finally speaking for themselves, you know? So everyone is telling their story. Mm-hmm. And I think we really tell a story of somebody who grew up here but is from there. And it's very clear in the food that I know that I'm not living in India right now, but it's really fun kind of transformations and things that we do with a lot of tradition is what's really fun about it.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I mean,
clearly 20 minutes is not enough for us guys.
It is not.
We've met our match in terms of, yeah,
we have met our match and we love
you.
It.
You guys don't know what you're walking into,
we
man.
Love it. I will say, you know, just to close this out, I guess I'll be the responsible fun, one. Yeah. But, you know, you have this incredible platform. You've had an incredible platform even before Top Chef. Mm-hmm. Where do you take it from here? What is next for you? What does affecting change at the local level, at a more, you know, national, global level look like for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me, and I hope this is a show that you can talk about everything on, because everything. I think – for me, the past year and a half has been really, really difficult, you know, kind of navigating Gaza, navigating everything that's happening there as a chef, waking up as a business owner and even caring about what we're going to do today, knowing that those things are going down out there. And it's just wild. So I think for me, it's about unapologetically being continued to be myself and making sure that that doesn't mean having animosity, but it means, really being very eloquent and like smart about how we engage with people, because I think food really allows us to engage with people across, you know, places that we would never imagine. You can never control the guests that come in. So I really value, even when it's a contradicting thought process or viewpoint than mine. And what I always find in the coach house is that we find that even ground to even have a conversation about it and like really discuss the things at hand. And that's why food is so important. Food allows us to break those walls down and really be honest about it. And so I think for me, using my platform is being unapologetically myself, supporting, you know, the Palestinian cause, and just like basically having that empathy for people that cannot fight for themselves. And it's really important. And, you know, Jewish Voice for Peace is one of my favorite organizations that I follow that really, really kind of shows this whole side of like, it's not about religion, because it's really not, you know. And it's like, and people don't like having chefs become political. You know, I'm sure people are going to start, and like, oh my God, he went there. And it's like, see, that's where you start to see everybody's really happy, go lucky about representation, and let's talk about culture, let's do this. And then you talk about something that they don't want to talk about, and all of a sudden it's like, oh no, we didn't want to touch that subject at this convention, you know? So it's like, I'm going to go fuck about any convention. I care about who I am. And I think being a chef and our food, it has to be a vehicle for change and a vehicle of really being able to have the conversations that we're afraid to have together.
That's beautiful. Well, Zubair, what a pleasure. Absolute pleasure.
Man. Thank you. I appreciate you guys so much. It's been great.
We're so glad to have you on the pod. Truly, dream come true. Sure. We wish we saw more of you on Top Chef, but
yeah, for sure.
We'll take a face-to-face conversation any day.
100% all day. You got to come to Chicago, come meet at the restaurants.
Yes, and, I definitely will.
We'll definitely hang out. I appreciate you guys so much.
Thanks, Zubair.
Have a good one. All right.